English language learners are people learning English in addition to their native language. The Washington State University College of Education has a robust ELL program. The No Child Left Behind Act, as well as subsequent legislation, demanded educational success of all children throughout the entire curriculum. Thus, children are not merely pulled aside and put in English as second language classes, but rather the teachers make curriculum accessible to ELL students by planning for accommodations throughout the content. There are certainly challenges with this. Primary among these is the growing number of ELL students in Washington public schools. It cannot be overlooked. At the same time, there are not enough school counseling or other services to meet the demand. We caught up with two College of Education professors during WSU's Academic Showcase and asked them to talk about their research, which aims to solve the problem, thus advancing opportunity and equity for all our state's children.
Education, news, and research. It's Education Eclipse from Washington State University.
All right, back here on Education Eclipse, I'm joined by Tom Salisbury and Susan Jensen. These are professor extraordinaires here at the College of Education. You've got some really interesting research and some cool graphs too. The title of your research, Identifying Counseling Needs and Services of, okay, so a specific group, middle school English language learners in Washington Public Schools. So first Washington, yep. Then middle school, then ELL students, and then Identifying Counseling Needs and Services. So how did you come up with this research, which I will point out is part of the Nichols Mitchell Faculty Fellowship Award? So good research, it's a great award. How'd you come up with this? What were some of the highlights?
How we came up with this. Tom and I were having coffee, and I was telling him that in my 14 years as a school counselor, I could probably identify 5 kids, or on one hand, how many ESL kids I had worked with in the public schools as a school counselor. And over those 14 years. And after some time away from the field, I was wondering if it had gotten any better. You know, if we were identifying counseling needs and services for these kids. So that led to us coming up with a way that we could go into schools and start looking at, do they have special needs? What kinds of services are provided or not?
The ELL, it is a growing number of kids in Washington Public Schools. Diversity is, you know, it's improving, it's increasing, and ELL is increasing too. So that seems to me like that would exacerbate the issue.
Yes, I think that was exactly our thought. And with the increasing numbers of ELL kids in our public schools, were their needs being met? And so that's what led us to design the study in the first place.
So what was the first step of this project? Did you do like a needs assessment rubric, that kind of thing? What did you first do, Tom?
Well, you know, the needs assessment rubric actually comes at the end, because what we're hoping for is, you know, as we are identifying these themes, you know, we are trying to create some way in which our counselors, our teachers, ELL teachers, can sit down together and have a set of issues that resonate with them, because it came from them, right? So that's our goal, is that we've got statements that people can talk about. And so, you know, down here on our poster, we have our rubric on, you know, how well are they doing, or the level of implementation of a, you know, particular theme. You know, what's the priority of that theme, and you know, what kind of resources are available to make that happen? So that's kind of where we're going with this. The way we started was going into schools. You know, we made our phone calls. We said, here's our abstract. We really want to know what the needs and services are. And the response has been really positive. I mean, people are like, oh, I want to talk. That's been every time we go to a school, it's like, I really want to talk. Because no one ever asks teachers anymore what they think, right? I want to talk. And so they do, and they really open up. And it's pretty amazing.
I can imagine a lot of times you go into a school and you have something else that's just seen as additional work for folks. Right. And they're like, oh, I don't want to. But this, when they see a need and they're spending so much time worried about it and trying to figure out how to do it, that this is good. So is this primarily Eastern Washington schools that this is going to be piloted with? Will it be statewide? Will it eventually go statewide? If not, what does that look like?
Yeah, so we're starting out Eastern Washington because we're close, right? And demographically, we've got a lot of diversity, a lot of variety. You know, we go down the Walla Walla area, it's really different, kind of this idea of a stable migrant community, up to Spokane, where we have a lot of refugee communities and, you know, issues around socioeconomic status. So there's a lot of diversity here. Our themes are, you know, emerging from the schools that we're working with here. But then we're hoping to develop a survey. And then from these themes, we can develop a survey and then go bigger. So we can, you know, look at, we can send that out to other schools in Washington.
Tom mentioned themes, Susan, but I'm just going to put you on the spot here. Can you remember right offhand what the themes are for your research?
Well, I can tell you right now that we have 7 themes and have only unpacked 1 of them to this point, and that's connections. And Tom and I have been in the schools, and we have been transcribing interview data, and analyzing interview data, going on 3 years so far. So this is a big project. We have 6 other themes that we still have to unpack. So do you want me to tell you what all 7 of our themes are? I'd be happy to do that.
Give me 2 of them, just as an example.
Okay. So counseling needs is one of our themes, and counseling services is another one of our themes.
Because I had just gone to a conference, what about awareness of culture, you know, culturally linguistic type stuff? Is that maybe one of those?
Yeah, I think that's a huge need because with our ESL or ELL population, we have cultural issues and language issues. And I think what we find in the schools is that they have a greater need to understanding, you know, the cultural issues that go on with these kids as well as their language issues. So that awareness is not probably there as much as it should be. And I think that will be one of those issues that the faculty come together and discuss.
So let's talk about that one theme then, which you said was connections. What does that mean? What kind of connections are we talking about? Is this like a connection to families? Because I hear a lot about that. You really have to get families involved and things like that. So what are we talking about?
So, well, we've identified 3 kinds of connections, really generally. We've got the connecting to families and communities, connecting to the kids, and then those connections, professional connections that people make between and across schools. And so as we kind of explore each of those connections, we find more themes, kind of sub-themes within those sub-themes. So, you know,
it never ends.
It never ends, yeah. So at some point we have to kind of put a stop and say, okay, well, if we've got connections, those professional connections, we can look at those and break those up. So professional connections are around access to information about English language learners, the idea of providing wraparound services, so everybody is a counselor, everybody's an English language learner, and we're not just looking at one person, one role, kind of a lone ranger mentality. Roles are, you know, throughout the school.
Yeah, they can't be in silos. I mean, they all have to collaborate.
Absolutely, yep. So we're not siloed. And then finally, having that time to collaborate, because, you know, our teachers and our literature say that if we want people to collaborate, we have to provide the time and we have to provide the space. So those are the sub-themes within this connection, professional connections. And then we, from what we learn, then we develop a rubric. So, for example, one statement, you know, might be that we have sufficient time and space to connect with colleagues across programs around critical counseling issues. And so then our participants can respond to that and say, well, yeah, you know, we do that a lot, or no, maybe actually we need to do that more. And is it a priority for us? Do we have the resources? Yeah.
When all this is, I don't know if it's ever done,
it'll be
right?
Done.
before you retire or after? Because it seems like you got a lot on your plate here with this. But what do you hope for with this? Is this something that schools readily will just do on their own? Will there be state legislation needed to help implement things? How does this actually become integrated into the school system, used, become effective, things like that?
Well,
we're tired of talking to Tom.
Yeah, I agree. I think our goal here at this point with the, we've got 2 years left on this Nichols Mitchell Faculty Award. And with that time, we'd like to unpack the rest of our themes and pilot the rubric in the schools. Now, the rubric is really not designed as an evaluation tool. We're not asking them to evaluate their programs. We're asking them to discuss the issue. So it's going to be a discussion tool. And we'll be there to watch them go through that discussion, and then we'll analyze that data. At that point, then, I think we'll make the decision about seeking an even bigger grant to move on into the state and look at additional middle schools or different levels. But that's a decision that we'll make down the road. So
obviously you want data to back up anything you do, and if you want a bigger grant, you're going to want that. But if you were to just look at the common sense test, like taking the rubric, sufficient time and space are available to connect with colleagues, I think most of them are going to say no. I mean, that's just
and I think most of them already know that. But when you bring together, when you have trans collaboration,
that's a big word.
That's a big word.
She may have made that up, actually.
Actually, I didn't. Ophelia Garcia made up that word.
Okay.
And but we like the idea, because unless all of those players, all of those stakeholders come together, one of them can't make a decision without the other two. It has to be a trans collaboration in order to move forward. And that's what the rubric will help them do.
I think we see a lot of them making decisions sometimes in silos, and this is not sustainable.
That's right. That's right. So that's what the discussion tool, the rubric, is all about, is to bring them all together and have them talk about it and plan around it.
Now, this is specifically ELL, but can this then model, could it be taken a lot bigger?
Oh, I think it probably could, sure.
Tom, you agreed, so now you get to talk.
Well, as a kind of a related to that, beyond just talking with teachers and the counselors, we're also talking with parents and the kids. And those are really important voices, because I think what we're learning from counselors is that they don't always know what to read in terms of nonverbal communication and verbally. Cultural, all of those issues are huge. So it's interesting if we say, well, we could extend it to other groups. Well, for sure, because our English language learners are our students, right? We're all part of this, and we're all really diverse schools. So I think it applies to everyone. Absolutely.
Okay. Tom Salisbury, Susan Jensen, two of our finest in the College of Education. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hey, thanks, Brandon.
Thank you, Brandon.
Thank you for listening to Education Eclipse, a College of Education podcast from Washington State University.